This is Wilt's Wake Up Call, Wilt being the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom. We're here every Friday morning from 7:30 to 8 o'clock, bringing you the important and hot news of the day. And today, oh, by the way, I'm Lori Hoyt, and our engineer is, as always, is Dick Paddock, and our guest today is Steve Wing, Stephen B. Wing, Associate Professor, University of North Carolina School of Public Health, Department of Epidemiology. And Steve and I have passed each other or been at many similar activist programs and conferences over the years, when they're connected with social justice, and the most recent that I'm aware of is the Rogers Road Eubanks struggle with the town. And it's good to have you here. But today our topic is going to be letting people know about, we're coming up to the time of remembering Hiroshima Day on August 6th, and Nagasaki Day on August 9th. And there is going to be a memorial program for each of them that Steve is going to talk on the medical and social impacts of nuclear weapons on Japan and the U.S. and about the prospects for change. And just to let you know, and I'll remind you, the August 6th program will be from 7 to 9 o'clock at Highland United Methodist Church, 1901 Ridge Road in Raleigh. And for our Chapel Hill and Carborough listeners, on August 9th, from 2 to 4 p.m., we're going to be having a memorial about Nagasaki Day at the Chapel Hill Public Library. That's off Estes Drive in Chapel Hills from 2 to 4. So it'll be a very convenient time, and I hope that many of you will come out. It's so important that we don't forget that this terrible tragedy occurred and what this means for us today. So welcome, Steve.
Well, it's good to be here and to support an activity of the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, because I've always admired your work and your commitment to peace and justice.
And likewise to you too. It's a ongoing struggle, but it is to me a struggle that brings so much meaning to your life, and that it's also engaging in such a community of wonderful people that I feel I get much more back from any of it than I give, and it's I hope it has a good impact on my kids and grandkids. they like that I'm doing this, and some of them are getting involved too. So where should we start off today? It's a huge topic. And where would you like to, should we just remind people what we're talking about, even the bombing at the end of the Second World War of two cities with all these civilians? These were not war plants. These were two, and one of them was a pretty ancient city with a lot of artifacts and history in it. And how the U.S. used these bombings to start a massive human experiment to study the long-term effects of radiation exposure. So this in itself is a big topic. And
it sure is. So maybe it's worth remembering how the development of nuclear weapons started, why the United States embarked on this massive program, because I think a lot of people in this country aren't even aware of the magnitude of the effort that went into developing nuclear weapons, and the number of people involved, and the number of states in this country. And so in the when World War II started, the administration, the U.S. administration, became concerned that the Germans would develop a new weapon. Physics was so advanced in Germany, and of course some of the great physicists had had come to the United States. And so the decision was made to begin this effort to develop a new weapon, and it was top secret. There was literally hundreds of thousands of people became involved in some way or another in this effort, and at first they didn't even know, most of them, what they were working on. So the idea behind nuclear weapons, unlike conventional weapons, explosive weapons, where there's something analogous to burning going on, whether it's TNT or whatever. With nuclear weapons, there, in the first nuclear weapons, actually, there was this nuclear fission reaction. The atom, the energy of the atom was being harnessed. And so in 1939, there was the first actually splitting of the atom, which was done in a nuclear reactor in a controlled reaction. And
in this country?
In this country, mm-hmm. In Chicago. And then the administration decided to put money into developing a nuclear weapon. And so plants were started all over the country. There was uranium mining that was started. And the weapons programs were mostly developed in rural places where they would be safe, easier to keep secret, and also far from population centers that might be harmed, because the people who started this program realized that they were dealing with a very dangerous engineering process. So,
and didn't know what would happen.
Well, that's true. Sure, they didn't know if it would work. Mm-hmm. They didn't know exactly how it would work. But in the Southeast, there was in East Tennessee at Oak Ridge, there were several large plants started. There was a facility started in Los Alamos, New Mexico, mm-hmm. in Hanford, Washington, or Richland, Washington, the Hanford facility, it's called. And of course, then the uranium mining was going on. And so by 1945, they had two ways to make a nuclear weapon. One was with uranium, and another with plutonium, which was required the fissioning of uranium in reactors, and then the isolation of this new element created in the reactor, plutonium. And so by the time they bombed Japan, they tried out both of these bombs. So the uranium bomb destroyed Hiroshima, and a plutonium bomb destroyed Nagasaki.
Oh.
And so they were actually
testing
out these new weapons in Japan.
Is that part of why they went ahead, even though weren't the Japanese suing for peace at that point and wanting to negotiate?
Well, you know, the question over the morality of mm-hmm. the nuclear bombings, I think, is a really important one, and something that people of this country should think about, mm-hmm. especially as we're at war on other countries currently. And of course, having so many wars since that time, and currently having military forces in so many other countries, and nuclear weapons spread around the world, that it was pretty clear that the Germans were not going to be able to develop nuclear weapons as the war continued.
Really?
They were losing the infrastructure that was required in this country. I mean, I just described the regions of the country over such a huge area. The scientific resources that went into this were massive, and the Germans weren't capable of doing that, of repeating that kind of thing, especially as they were trying to manage this massive war. And as you say, it's correct, the Japanese were ready to surrender. Mm-hmm. And so one thing that's really tragic, as you noted in your opening comment, is that these cities, these were not military centers. Mm. In fact, most of the military troops, the young men, had left the cities. Mm. They were at military bases. Mm-hmm. So both Hiroshima and Nagasaki were full of older people and women and children, people who weren't in the military. And I don't know what definition of terrorism you could have which would exclude these acts.
Yeah.
Especially at a time when no one else in the world had nuclear weapons. There was no way they were being developed at that time. And Japan was about to surrender.
Yeah.
And so in Hiroshima...
I don't think people realized that at the time. I mean, I was a kid, you know, and it was just, oh, thank God, this war is over, and we've got this big, new, amazing bomb that just suddenly ended the war. I mean, as a kid, that's the vibes that I got and heard and understood for quite a few years afterwards, until then reports were coming in about what it actually... I think John Hershey had some report about what this did to people. And start rethinking was what was this all about.
So in the estimates of the casualties from the bombings are uncertain, but the best estimates are that something like 140 or 150,000 people were killed almost immediately in Hiroshima, and something like 70 or 80,000 in Nagasaki, due to the differences in the population size and the terrain and so on. But these weapons create not just radiation, they create a huge amount of blast force and thermal energy, which burns things. And so the cities are destroyed. And for anyone who doesn't know much about it, I think it's really informative to look at some of the photographs that were taken in both cities shortly afterwards, because the level of destruction from nuclear weapons is just unimaginable. Mm. That one bomb almost instantaneously can create this amount of damage. Whole cities can be destroyed. And another thing I think many people don't realize is that those bombs were very small weapons compared to most of the ones that are in today's nuclear arsenal in the United States.
That's horrifying. And you almost wonder, why? What would be the point of an even bigger...
Right.
You know, what would be the point?
Well, of course, for decades, this was a so-called deterrent, and the Soviet Union felt it had to develop nuclear weapons because the United States had them.
Mutually assured destruction or something?
Yes, and mutually assured destruction. So it's almost as though in the early 1940s a threshold was crossed where if the United States had decided, well, it looks like the Germans aren't going to get this and no one else has it and the expense is huge, let's stop. If that decision had been made, maybe today we wouldn't have a world that is threatened by destruction from nuclear weapons. But that was not the decision. And in fact, the decision was made to use the weapons on Japan, some argue, in part, as a demonstration to the Soviets of America's military might.
I've heard that. Yeah.
And so what happened... of course, by the time the bombs were used, it was already known that radiation, ionizing radiation, which is much more damaging to living cells than non-ionizing radiation, which would include light and the radio waves that are being made here this morning at WCOM. Mm-hmm. They don't damage cells the way ionizing radiation does, because it breaks the bonds. It can break the bonds in the atom. And by the time of World War II, it was well known that this kind of radiation had what was very hazardous, and in fact could cause genetic mutations that can be passed on to offspring, and also that it can cause cancer. And this was well known. So one of the things that the United States did under the occupation of Japan, when U.S. troops were in Japan and the country was being run essentially by the so-called Supreme Allied Commander, General MacArthur, the United States started a massive study, a medical study of the people who had survived. The Japanese early on realized that there was, within probably several months of the bombing, there began to be an epidemic of leukemia in the people who had actually survived the acute effects of the bombing, the burns, the acute radiation damage, other effects of the blasts. And the cities themselves were ravished. Of course, all the medical facilities were destroyed. Much of the food supply, the water supply. In Nagasaki, the, you know, nuclear weapons create fallout because a lot of radioactive particles rise up into the atmosphere during this blast, which is so hot. The particles are carried into the air, and then if there's rain, they come down. Well, in Nagasaki, the fallout came down in the water supply. In Hiroshima, shortly after the bombing, there was a typhoon. So the cities were just devastated, and the capacity to respond was low. But there was a recognition early on that there were these so-called late effects that after you think that the immediate damage is disappearing, then people are getting sick, and
that's also the horrifying part about it, that the effects go on and on.
Right, like and so this massive study was started of the survivors, and what happened was,
before we get into the study, I'm getting a. Dick, we take a station break here, and I have to mention, this is Wilf's wake-up call. We're on WCOM LP, and we have an underwriter internationalist bookstore at 405 West Franklin Street. You can get more information at internationalistbooks.org, and if you want to get more information about us, it's trianglewilf.org. And let me get back down to Steve, and we're talking about the aftermath of the horrific bombings at the end of World War II of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, and the medical and social consequences after the initial bomb, then the radiation and other consequences went on.
So this huge study was started of the survivors, and there were many problems with the study, and the scientists were interested both in the genetic effects that might occur in the offspring of the survivors, as well as in the diseases which would appear later, long after the bombing. And I guess I could make several comments about those studies. One is that the Japanese survivors themselves experienced a new form of discrimination within Japan. And they were actually seen as tainted because of their radiation exposure. It was hard for a young person who had survived the bombing to marry if it were known to the partner and the partner's family, because this person was viewed as potentially that their offspring would be affected, and so on. And that affected the studies because of the fact that people had to identify themselves as survivors, mm-hmm. and they had to provide information about where they were, because one of the key parts of the study was to estimate how much radiation they had received, which was a function of their distance from where the bomb exploded, mm-hmm. as well as their surroundings,
mm-hmm.
What shielding they might have had.
Mm-hmm.
And so these were problems which affected, most importantly, the people who survived. But then it also affected the scientific work,
mm-hmm.
and raises questions about the accuracy.
Mm-hmm.
But one thing that is important to recognize is that the latest studies, and there's still papers appearing in the medical journals up this year, 2009,
wow.
About the effects of radiation on the survivors from Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And it's clear that the survivors are still getting cancer and dying because of the radiation that they received in 1945.
Oh.
So these effects literally are playing out until the end of the life of the people who were exposed.
Oh.
And of course, the people who are still alive now are young.
Mm-hmm.
The older people
have already
died. But it's important for us to recognize that,
yeah.
this is something that just doesn't go away quickly.
Yeah.
And there's very good evidence,
yeah.
that the effects continue until today. And then on the flip side, I think it's important for us to realize what's happened in the United States as a result of the development of nuclear weapons. In no way to take from the experiences of the Japanese and the immorality of what was done, but there was unfortunately a mirror image in a way in here,
mm-hmm.
in the United States, because we were convinced, as you talked about your knowledge of this,
mm-hmm.
when you were a child, Lori, that we were convinced that this was a grand achievement.
Yes.
And the people who participated in this, and they weren't thinking of themselves as evil,
mm-hmm.
or as immoral. They were defending the United States.
Yeah, and that they were so brilliant.
Right. And they had achieved something that harnessed this immense force, which was previously unknown.
Mm-hmm.
And the cities were built in order to create nuclear weapons,
mm.
where there had been no cities before.
Oh.
And it turns out that hundreds of thousands of people were exposed to ionizing radiation in this country and to hazardous chemicals in these facilities. And the United States tested nuclear weapons for a long time. And in fact, in the continental United States at the Nevada test site,
mm-hmm.
until the early 1960s. So it's now very well known,
mm-hmm.
that people all over the United States, and they're sometimes called downwinders, and literally we are basically all downwinders, because
mm.
the fallout from the nuclear weapons tests it was carried across the United States,
mm-hmm.
and many, many people have gotten cancer,
mm-hmm.
because of the fallout,
mm-hmm.
and of course it's diluted. We don't know which ones of us have gotten cancer,
mm-hmm.
because of the weapons fault. But we know that this has been happening for a long time. Also, we know that the workers who were exposed to radiation to higher levels in the course of running the nuclear reactors,
mm-hmm.
and the chemical processes that were necessary to extract the bomb materials.
And the uranium miners.
Right, and the uranium miners, exactly.
And a lot of them being Native Americans.
Exactly.
Oh.
Very true. In in the Southwest, mm-hmm. where the families who lived near and with the tailings from these mines,
yeah.
which were sources of ionizing radiation. So these are casualties. What actually this week I met with a man who for 7 years monitored the radiation exposures of workers at the Hanford plutonium factory. That's where the plutonium that destroyed Nagasaki was made in the town of Richland, Washington. And he said to me that he believes that there were more people killed in the United States from the development of the bombs than were killed in Hiroshima and Nagasaki.
Oh, my God.
Due to the bombs themselves.
Yeah.
And, you know, how you make the calculations, mm-hmm. I haven't done it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure whether I could say yes or no,
mm-hmm.
but it's not implausible.
No.
And we also have to remember that the fallout from the weapons tests in the United States didn't stop at the borders, that this fallout was carried around the world. So it's mm-hmm. really, the downwinders literally are the entire population of the Earth.
Wow. And just like with Chernobyl, too.
Exactly.
All
exactly.
over, that went all over the world, too. But Europeans were much more aware going across Europe. Yeah. So we have 5 minutes. This is such a huge subject, Steve, that at some point we'd love to have you back. But I do want to remind people that they can get a more in-depth learning about this, because this affects all of us, affects our children, our grandchildren, that on, particularly here for Chapel Hill, on August 9th, a Sunday afternoon from 2 to 4, we're going to be, I won't say celebrating, we'll be memorializing Nagasaki Day. And at the Chapel Hill Public Library off Estes Drive from 2 to 4, Steve will be talking about this, the medical and social impacts of nuclear weapons on Japan and us, and also getting to the prospects for change.
Right, and maybe we could end with just noting, I would like to recognize that the survivors in Japan of the bombings have a wonderful history of organizing for peace and for the end of nuclear weapons. And their children and grandchildren are actually carrying that on. They have, so for an organization like Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, these are kindred spirits.
Yes.
In the country that was bombed. And what's wonderful is that also in the United States, these cities that were created, which beyond the ones I mentioned would include Livermore, California, and Brookhaven on Long Island, and facilities all over the country, that groups have organized to call attention to the occupational exposures and the environmental contamination from the development of nuclear weapons, and to call for a reorientation of these national laboratories and production facilities to take away their mission of destruction and transform it into one for peace and mm-hmm. for the well-being of all of us.
Remember, they used to talk about Atoms for Peace, and we haven't done it, but it's certainly something we got to get back to. And the whole thing with the nuclear proliferation treaty. Okay, goodbye.